There's something that holds a gazillion things in its own mind simultaneously throughout the entire universe. Billions and billions of planets and billions of galaxies. Like, how in the world is this possible? It's breathing us. It's living in us. Tune in and find out what its message is for you. And then it has a message probably for humanity. Otherwise, you wouldn't have bothered being born on this earth. And that's the beauty of it.
Hello, and thanks for joining us. I am your host, behavioral coach Jeffrey Biesecker. And that was today's guest, Mark Kulik. We're all on the journey to discover the light inside, that beacon which guides us to live our truest, most authentic self. This is episode number 87, Grace. For some, it's the simple, elegant refinement of their mood. And for others, it's courteous goodwill and respect shown to those around them. A simple prayer before a meal. Honoring one's presence by showing regard with dignity, respect, and reverence. With so many ways of appreciating a state of grace and extending it towards others, there's often room to get lost in the interpretation. Today, we're going to explore not only how to form your own understanding of what grace means to you, but also how discovering what lights you up inside allows you to extend this same grace to others. Tune in as we find out how with today's guest, Mark Kulik, on this episode of The Light Inside. Super stoked for this guest today. Mark Kulik is part guru, part mystic, part wise sage, with a big, big dash of heart. His love and light simply speaks grace, both for others and the universe around him. If you've ever found yourself stopping to wonder just what is grace, join us in this conversation with Mark as we unravel some of the mystery. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Jeffrey.
Thanks for joining me.
Oh my God, are you kidding? Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor and a privilege.
I'm looking forward to this conversation today. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for asking. Yeah, very good.
Fantastic. So today we're going to take a look at exploring not only how to form our understanding of what grace means to you, to each of us, but also how discovering what lights us up inside allows us to extend that same grace to others.
Yes, that's what we're here for. And grace certainly permeates the entire omniverse. So there's no reason why our listeners can't get a little piece of it or expand their experience of it by what it is that we're going to talk about.
That state of grace in and of itself can be kind of a ambiguous and fluid notion. You know, it's one of those things I think so many of us look for that way to grasp what its meaning is, how that creates meaning for us then. Let's start off by looking at just what grace is and how does our understanding of this process allow us to form meaning and connection with others?
So what's grace? You know, and I think for me in my life, being a bit of a mystic and meditating for 40 years and having a life that would seem very ungraceful when I started out in this life, filled with trauma and early childhood challenges and things where unintended results seem to be the way of life for me rather than having things flow as we would like them to flow. So what I came to realize earlier on in the piece is that what my ego and my childhood and my parents were creating for me wasn't necessarily the same as the current that runs through the universe. That ego is not the same as soul. So I think that grace is like the presence or the realm that soul lives in and comes from. And that's kind of what grace is. It's like what permeates the universe. It's like what's left over when everything else from the mind and the ego and the trauma and everything else disappears. There's a current and there's a presence. And that current and that presence that is the infinite intelligence of the universe is grace.
Mm. We all form that different understanding of what that current of the universe is. We have so many different views and perspectives. And that's not to say any one of those are right or wrong. You know, we each find and form our own meaning, our own purpose in life, our own sense of purposefulness. For some, it's that simple, elegant refinement of movement. You know, we see grace in how we are being and how we're doing things, how we're interacting with others. For others, it's that courteous goodwill and respect for others. Simple prayer before a meal for some becomes grace, the grace of God. We look at honoring one's presence by showing regard with dignity, respect, and reverence as being a state of grace. To me, that's awesome to look at how we're simply finding that greater meaning in life or that more significant meaning in life to move that into an even different plane of perspective. From that perspective, and this is posing as a question, how do we then start to align with grace, bring it into our lives while extending it towards others from your perspective, Mark?
So just to dovetail on all the lovely things that you just said, it seems that this presence in my model has certain characteristics and traits. And you certainly mentioned a half a dozen of them just off the top of your head there. And being that way with other people, being kind, being loving, being compassionate, being empathetic, saying a prayer, being mindful, living our lives from a sense of devotion and mindfulness, all these things are what I would say are qualities of the divine. And I think grace is an expression certainly of the divine. And when we connect with our higher emotions, love, peace, joy, exhilaration, exuberance, compassion, understanding, caring, kindness, empathy, peace, justice, sustainability, things like that, as opposed to the lower emotions, anger, fear, grief, guilt, and shame, making that distinction in our lives, like if there is a presence and this presence expresses as grace as one thing, then it also has certain emotional components to it that we as humans can live on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis, like some of those higher emotions. So as humans, of course, we have emotions so that we can see the barometer of how we're feeling in any one given moment. And in any one given moment, we have the opportunity to stop ourselves and to say, whoa, I was feeling great a minute ago. What in the world happened? Now I'm feeling like crap. So what am I thinking that's making me feel this way? And what are those feelings? And if those lower feelings, anger, fear, grief, guilt, shame, not to deny those things, but to allow them to be, evaluate them, reflect on them, use self-reflection and see if in fact it's useful that we experience those things in the moment. And if not, then to transmute those emotions and connect back with those higher expressions of what I would say would be grace.
We look at that, and from that perspective, to me, one of those greatest states of grace we can exercise is simply having that space to create that grace for ourselves. I know, Mark, in our earlier interactions, you outlined to me what stood out as basically six principles of extending grace. I'd like, if we may, to jump into that conversation and look at how we can begin to engage this process. Let's start from what you shared with looking at holding space for that inner healing that often needs to happen to remove some of these energetic blocks, some of these emotional blocks, some of these blocks and beliefs that we often lean into that hinder us maybe from connecting with that state of grace. I know you mentioned such emotional states, leaning back into that emotional element as anger, grief, and fear. What are some of these blocks we often experience that don't allow us to open our heart, open our being to that sense of grace?
Well, certainly the blocks that we as humans experience is like our life are the things that happen to us day to day that cause us to respond habitually, unconsciously from a sense of survival rather than a sense of purpose and knowingness. And so through our limited beliefs and most often through our war with our inner self, I think is probably the biggest thing that blocks grace from our lives. Because a lot of us, well, we all know we all have a voice in our head, at least two, sometimes an entire chorus. And the voice of the ego, the lower voice, the one that makes us bad, wrong, stupid, unloved, unlovable, incapable, inadequate, not good enough, unseen, unheard, unworthy, that voice, which I call the voice of the ego or the voice of the core lie of who we are, that's our biggest block to grace. Because as soon as we start to feel not good enough and unworthy, unseen and unheard or whatever, we then begin to take action in the world to try and get love and remain safe. And in the process of trying to get love and remain safe, we wind up compromising our soul and actually moving further away from our soul and modifying who we are and what our soul essence really is, in order to try and get love and remain safe. And then we go onto this road of trying to just do that, to survive in the world. And in a sense, by doing that, we're actually severing our connection with the flow of life itself and with grace itself. So the blocks to grace really is our own self-hatred on some level, or feelings of unworthiness that we bought into and that we believe, and buying into that stuff. And then all the limiting beliefs that we have about the world itself. Life doesn't work. Things are hard. Things never work out for me. Life is unfair. So all those limiting beliefs that we were brought up with also contribute to blocking grace. Because once we're believing those things, of course, then we're unable to receive the goodness that already is.
We looked at that level of ego. I just got done rolling out a great episode on how we look at that ego often. You know, so often we're viewing that ego as the enemy rather than embracing that with a simple grace to invite that side back into us and say, hey, this can be a friend. We often get entangled in that emotional reactivity. We act toward ourselves. We do all of this inner dialogue. Often we turn that outward. We act toward others out of our emotions before we process them, then breaking this graceful connection with ourselves, with others. Moving into those higher energetic states releases those lower energies. What are a few of the practices which empower us to do so, so we can move into a more graceful alignment with what we deem those higher energies?
Yeah, I think probably the most important thing to start off with is to be mindful, is to realize that we have a distinction that we're trying to make here between feeling good and not feeling good, being happy and being angry or sad or afraid. And so making that distinction is the first thing. And that comes with probably the greatest competency that we have as humans, which is self-reflection. And as a practice, self-reflection is probably the most important thing that we have, because without it, we're just buying whatever it is that our mind is telling us. And like you just said, just to dovetail on that, the ego certainly is not our enemy. It's just like a child who isn't getting what it wants. And so it'll act out at any one situation or circumstance, opportunity or condition to try and get what it wants. And so for us and is a part of us. And you're right. It's so right. And so needs to be loved and brought back into the fold. And certainly there are practices and meditations and things where we embrace our ego and we tell it how much we love it and tell it how much that we are there and we are going to take care of that part of ourselves. And as we move into the light, we're going to take our little ego with us. But you have to sit down now and you have to just drink your chocolate milk and you just have to behave so that we can move into these higher things and you can come along. And you can come along with us. So I think that self-reflection, anyway, just to get back to that, is the start of it. And if we're being self-reflective, then we have the opportunity to know how we feel. And then you need a practice to be able to shift your thinking in some way. You need to be able to shift your thinking, raise your emotional energy, and connect through the heart, what I would say, through the heart, into the intuition, into the higher mind, and then download what the intuition has to say. Because there's another voice inside of us that's certainly as loud, if not louder, than the voice of the ego, which is the voice of our intuition. And being able to distinguish that from the voice of our ego, and then to be able to connect with that, and then it always has something beautiful to say. It has something lighter to say. It has something more expansive to say. It has something more inclusive to say. It has something more loving to say to us. And as we connect with that voice, and then we can use that as what we want to go with in any one moment in our lives, rather than what the lower mind is telling us. So those are just a couple of practices.
I love that you mentioned that inner child. That inner child has that voice that wants to be loved. Having that love embraces that grace. We often get caught up in that cycle of belief of, you know, what the inner voice is telling us. You know, our beliefs are truly subjective to our own perception. Until we bring that perception of how we see things, how we view things into our awareness, we hold these truths, but are they truly self-evident truths? What is self-evident? Belief and faith. I'm holding that notion that what will be, will be. There's no need to explain what we hold is truth. So often we get caught in that need for explanation of expectation. the why, but does this truly serve us? Which brings me to this notion of service. What is serving us also serves others. You mentioned how that act of service can become such a crucial role in understanding how we can truly move into that state of grace. From that perspective, how can we simply surrender ourselves and be of service to others?
Yeah, well, isn't that the infinite question that the yogis and the mystics and the sadhus have been asking for thousands of years? How do we surrender? And I think the question really is, what am I surrendering? What am I giving up? And even more importantly, what am I giving it up to? Who am I surrendering to, or what am I surrendering to?
What are you resisting and why? You know, you feel those energies of resistance that kind of often seem to prickle up against us. That to me, from my perspective, is one of the key indicators. You can inherently start to feel that anxiety, that restriction, that stress, that kind of weird bubbling under the surface that says, hey, what's going on here? That's telling you, signaling that you're holding on to something that you're afraid to let go of, something you're afraid to just allow and accept.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And that's not really taught to us either.
No, we're not patterned to believe that. You know, and what do? We operate on the patterns we're trained to believe. Often those beliefs aren't even things we thought through ourselves. They're just the patterns that we've been taught to accept. Yeah. And there again, we're kind of moving back on that duality where, you know, we're talking about acceptance. So how do we start to look at that and say, do I accept what I've been given as the truth, or do I align that to my understanding of truth?
Right. So I think in the search for happiness, we have to evaluate that. Do I accept what it is that's been given, or how is that working out for me? You know, and if it's not working out too well, well, maybe there's another model. Yeah. Maybe there are other models. Maybe there are other things to look at. So one thing that we're not taught is that resistance is a form of information. Resistance is like stress, is like an evolutionary tool designed to whittle our soul down to a point so that we can impregnate the higher realms of reality and consciousness. But we think of resistance or stress not as biological or psychological or philosophical or evolutionary components of expansion. We look at them as limits. We look at that stuff as limits instead. So right away, shifting our perspective, our perception, our understanding about what stress or what these things are, all of a sudden, and that gets back to what you were talking about surrender. It's like, oh, so if this is occurring for me now, it doesn't mean that I have to resist it. It means that I can relax, breathe into my heart, and allow this to come in and see where it is it's coming from. Does it have any value for me in the moment? Is there something that I need to reflect on or take action on? Or is it in fact coming from somewhere else, from someone else's aura, from the bus down the street with 30 people on it who have BO and they're having a pissed off day and I'm like picking up the vibes because I'm driving my Ferrari next to them, or whatever it is. And then make those kinds of distinctions. But to understand the bottom line is that all things work for good.
And again, in order for those things to work, we simply have to let go of that expectation of how we think it's supposed to work. We can plan, we can strategically align things in our lives, but ultimately we're at the fate of other elements, other energies acting on that. You know, we're at the fate of other people oftentimes. We can't control and manipulate others. That becomes that restrictive energy. You're trying to hold on to what you think and feel should be the outcome, rather than just letting that outcome come to you as it comes. And being grateful for that experience, you know, is a big thing. Understanding when to let go of something that isn't serving what you feel is aligned with your core values and of a productive good to you.
Yeah, and being able to make those distinctions that a lot of people don't trust enough to be able to do that. And I think trust is an important issue here.
Yeah, but to me, that trust is an inward action. So often, what are we doing? We say, I'm going to trust you if, I'll trust you when. I don't trust you because, I would trust you, but we're adding all of those stop words, all of those restrictive energies that are nothing more than that expectation. To me, that's not trust. That's shifting into that judgment and expectation. to me, that trust is inward. You know, you have to simply have the faith and confidence in others to say, I see you, I hear you, I have faith and believe in you. Nothing more. That's trust. That's true, authentic trust to me. It's not based on conditions.
No, I mean, that's a great distinction, certainly. And trusting in other people, we've been led to not trust in other people because we've been hurt, I think. And so some people.
Yeah, that becomes projection. We're projecting the actions of another onto them. We're projecting our thoughts and feelings onto them. And that's not an objective state to allow somebody to say, I see the authentic you, I accept the real you without no expectation.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's really beautiful.
We don't learn that. We're taught the opposite. We're taught a lot of other different methods. A lot of what we learn about the ways we form and view trust are based on observing others and their reaction. So much what we do throughout life is based on the observation of others rather than that internal observation of what creates significant value and meaning for us.
You know, I wonder, Jeffrey, if people in general, you know, God has got such a bad rap in the world, misunderstanding and through religion and things like that. Having trust in a higher power, having trust in a flow, having trust in a universal consciousness, having trust in an infinite intelligence that actually is guiding and directing and animating and expressing as everything in the universe simultaneously, that actually knows more than we do. And being able to trust to have some kind of a belief,
yes,
in something that knows more than me. Please, thank God, there's got to be something out there that knows more than me.
Here's a thought I've been chewing on lately. Maybe if we look at that, the whole point is that same being is reflected in us. You know, we expect that same level of action out of this being. Maybe putting us into a different perspective. That being simply exhibits that trust for us. I gave you everything you needed to know. Everything is there available to you. It's just how you use it. You know, the power is within you because the power is in everything. Yet we look to project that power out again. This God is supposed to guide me. This God is supposed to answer all my questions. What if the answer from that God is, but I already taught you how to do it yourself, and I trust you to do the job.
Right. And that's beautiful. And that, in a sense, is a core belief that I think would be really useful for people to adopt, to be able to know and understand that there are principles. Like, let's just call that a principle. Like, hey, what if the principle here is that the infinite intelligence, God, whatever you want to call it, put all of that perfection within inside of each individual. So we have the power, then all you have to do, what we have to do, is to go within and to find that place or those places inside of us. But there are people who don't even know that. So if they don't know that, they're still, and we have in our lives, until we found that out, are living lives from going out in the world and trying to figure shit out with our heads and running into all sorts of unintended outcomes as a result.
Yeah. Sometimes one antenna isn't working to pick up the right frequency. You aren't tuned into the right channel. Sometimes that channel's the head. Sometimes when you change that channel to the heart, to the soul, to the spirit, to the body, you start to pick up different frequencies. You start to tune in that different channel. That might be speaking a different message, just like a radio station. You know, you tune down the dial, you hear one thing. You tune down the dial, you hear another. Our opinions and beliefs are just that, an opinion and a belief, our perception. Don't be stuck in it. You know, be flexible because that allows you to tune that channel within yourself, to tune into a different perspective, a different view, a different understanding of everything around you, including yourself.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. I've heard it said that, you know, there are no problems in the world. All problems are problems of perception.
I want to share a little secret with you today about a podcast booking and matching platform I truly love. As a podcast host and guest, my go-to podcast booking app is podmatch.com. If you currently have a podcast, regularly guest on podcast, or if you are new to the podcasting game looking to start your show, podmatch.com is an industry leader. They quickly and effortlessly connect ideal podcast guests and hosts. Their process is super easy and highly effective. create your free guest or host account, and set up your profile. It's really that easy. And the PodMatch AI will work its magic in the background, delivering your ideal interview matches within minutes, tailored uniquely for you. As a host and executive producer of the top 100 self-improvement podcast, The Light Inside, I found more high-quality guests on PodMatch than anywhere else and in a fraction of the time. So if you're looking to expedite your podcast booking experience, filling your calendar with high engagement content, creating value and meaning for your listening community, check out podmatch.com, that's podmatch.com today, and discover your ideal match magic. So often we speak to that notion of establishing a core belief, you know, and that core is meant to be a foundation, but not meant to be the rock that's laid upon you to hold you down. These are just that starting point that I say, here is where I begin. We have to regularly go back to that beginning, just like playing a child's board game. Sometimes you're climbing up those chutes and ladders of life. You go to the top of one thing, you have to slide back down. You know, we create this perception that it's always climbing the ladder. Very often, it can be like that child's board game. You have to slide back down to those core beliefs and say, all right, I see you again. All right, what are we going to do with this now? Does this still serve me and does it serve others?
So yes, it's like a constant chess match with a part of ourselves back and forth, in and out, and making these certain moves. But I think we both agreed, and we talked about that earlier in our lives, when these perceptions are being developed, there's a particular model that we all incarnated into, we showed up into, and we've been programmed, you know, let's say through media or through religion or through education for that matter.
Yeah.
And the model, you know, work 40 years, 40 hours, and then, you know, get sick, any money that you might have made, pay to your insurance, and then die. And there's got to be more than that. And the yogis certainly often talk about just giving up the whole need to do anything in your life.
Yeah.
And we talked about service a little bit ago. I think that the more that we are able to shift our thinking or beliefs or experience away from our core lies of unworthiness, and if there's any epidemic in the world, I think that's probably what it is. And as we're able to shift away from that, then the presence that's left within us, we'll call it soul, we'll call it God, call it infinite intelligence, call it an aspect, call it grace. It has certain characteristics. And one of them, of course, is we have this heart-opening sense of empathy. Mm. And with that heart-opening sense of empathy, we are so grateful, one, for having had the experience of found this place within ourselves, and then understood how to surrender to it, how to surrender our thoughts to this place of peace, this place of understanding, this place of unconditional love and non-judgment and ceasing judgment of ourselves and hopefully others. But we're so grateful that we have no other choice really, but to want to help other people. And it's from that place, I think, that, you know, the evolution and everything really rolls. Because as each one of us comes to that place, and not everybody's going to get there in this life. And I think that's kind of normal too, really. But that when we do, or as we do, to the extent that we do, is the extent that we want to help others.
Ultimately, along that journey, we have to have that grace to simply honor what is authentic to ourselves. Living with our own volition or self-determination, you know, self-choice, allows us to also then live in that authentic light of love for others. You know, we have to mirror that in ourselves first to see it back in others. How do we start to look at what that light is that we always refer to inside of us, that we see the light, you know, we see the light in others?
Well, I know for me, you know, meditation certainly has served as a practice to be able to make some distinctions about what I'm thinking and feeling, and to connect with a place that's more of an inner resilience that exists in and under everything else. And being able to make those connections inside of ourselves, letting go of the things that, like you said before, that aren't working for us, and knowing that we have a place inside of us where love exists. And when we don't feel it, how do we get back there? So it's like leaving breadcrumbs for ourselves. so that we can connect back with that place that we discovered once or twice, maybe in a flash, and said, oh my God, what's that incredible feeling? I felt so amazing there. How do I get back there? And that's what the journey is, isn't it, really?
Sometimes I think we lose that perspective that back there doesn't really go anywhere. We might lose sight of it. You know, I flip that into that kind of reference to the footprints in the sand. That thing that's there is following us all along, not to frame it in any particular religious vernacular, but that thing truly is inside. It's there with us. And, you know, we just aren't being aware of it sometimes until we turn around and look at it, till we look within and look at it. Sometimes till we just simply say, hey, yeah, I see you over there. Call out for it, you know? That calling out is the very act of surrender. Hey, I need that you that's inside of me.
That's beautiful.
We look at that, you know, that moves us into this principle you shared in our discussion early on and looking at this angle, purposeful intention throughout our lives. You know, sometimes we aren't intentionally doing things. How then, from your perspective, Mark, can we reconnect with that sense of that source inside of us to start embracing that purposeful intention throughout everything we do in life? So often we just look at that one angle that I feel I'm only sent here for one purpose. There's only one thing that truly lights me up and creates any meaning in my life. To me, that in and of itself can become a very limiting place of perspective to place yourself in. You create that box that says, without this one thing, this one sense, I can't truly find that love and fulfillment in anything I do. From that perspective, how then do we start to find that sense of purpose from your perspective?
Finding our sense of purpose. You know, while you were talking, I was just reflecting on the idea of taking stock through gratitude, the things in our lives that have worked, the things in our lives over the years and the time of our lives that when things have worked miraculously for us, synchronistically for us, by grace, either whether we use those words for it or not. And to take stock of those things and to say, wow, you know, here I am being a bitch about things, about my life, about whatever, and I'm pissed off about this, that, or the other thing. But if I choose to take a moment and reflect back, I can see that there have been times when, despite me, through no good intention or action of my own, things have still worked out for me. What is that? That's got to activate our human curiosity as to find, well, what is that? And what is that thing? And then understanding that that thing, in fact, does exist, which is your light within, and then finding the practices like we've talked about, too. I mean, for me, I have certain practices that I do. Self-reflection, like I said, is certainly one of those practices, and being aware of how I'm thinking and feeling and stopping myself and then shifting my thinking and connecting with higher ways of looking at things. I remember when I was much younger and I had serious head injuries and neck injuries, and I was a dancer and I couldn't perform anymore. Mm. And they wanted to operate on my spine. And it was way before that was something that was certainly, you know, useful or looked upon as being, you know, possible hardly. So anyway, the diagnosis was I had a degenerative disc in my cervical spine. I was 22 years old. I had 5 head injuries by that time. That was my diagnosis. Then I listened. My ego said, oh, my God, you are so screwed because you're going to live the rest of your life with a neck brace on medication and everything. And then I thought, okay, well, I don't know what voice that is, but is there another perspective on this? What does my soul have to say about this? Mm. And so then my soul said, you can heal yourself and you can help others. So then all of a sudden I realized, boom, I had this model. I had the diagnosis, which was neutral. Then I had underneath that what my ego was telling me about that diagnosis. Yes. And then I had on top of that what my higher self was telling me about that diagnosis. And then I got to choose which one of those two things where I was going to put my antenna, as you would say, into the lower world or into the higher world. And so in that moment, I decided I was going to put my antenna into the higher world and not take what my ego said as my life sentence, if you will. And through that, then through prayer, through meditation, through fasting, through visualization, through coaching, through different forms of being in nature, I was able to shift the energy biologically in my body and go back 18 months later and be re-x-rayed. And the doctor said, this is a miracle. I've never seen this before. You have a medical miracle here. The spine doesn't regrow itself. The discs don't regrow themselves. How is it that you do this? This is impossible. So with a medical miracle under my belt, I realized that if that was impossible, then shifting my thinking into my own soul's offerings to me was a lot more useful than going with my ego. And I don't know if that's benefit for the listeners or not, but just to know that you have a minimum of two voices, a higher voice in the
world.
And at any moment, you have the opportunity to choose which one you want to listen to. Yeah. One of them is much more holistic than the other.
That simple gratitude for that perspective gives you a chance to evaluate where you're creating the meaning in your life, where you're finding that purposeful intention for the opportunities and saying, thank you. That's not always to say that everything is going to make you feel good. That's not always to say every unfortunate, eventful thing that happens to you is just to be accepted and say, yeah, this is fantastic. But we can form our own meaning as we go out of that. Gratitude in all things opens that door to that Lady Grace. You know, she's a beautiful and loving lady, that Lady Grace. Let her in. But we so often close that door in the face of that grace and say, in this time, in this circumstance, I'm not going any further. I'm stuck here. I'm not seeing anything but all of the downside of it. Rather than saying, it is what it is, now what will it become?
Well, that kind of gets back to the notion of surrender and that all things, all manner of seen and unforeseen good is always available to us humans as we learn to shift our perception in the moment and not react or resist. I think addictions is a big thing that we distract ourselves with, for example, because these are ways that we aren't allowing ourselves to feel our feelings or think our thoughts. And if we're in distraction through addiction and avoidance, then we're not feeling our feelings and thinking our thoughts, when in fact the fodder for enlightenment is feeling our feelings and thinking our thoughts. But from the observer position, from the meditator position, from the captain of the ship, not the crew, and just being able to observe these things that are going on within us and go, oh, that's very interesting. Is that useful for me? Where is that coming from? Do I need to think this? Do I need to feel this? What is that bringing to mind? But instead, again, through any kind of addictions, whatever they are, these are ways that we distract ourselves from having our life. And again, all these things are the fodder for us to awaken to the true self of who we are. And so everything. What if our soul was actually the one that was creating even our worst trauma? And I believe that it is, because I believe that there's only one power, one mind, one presence, one consciousness, and that's all good. And that all good as infinite intelligence is bringing everything to us that we need. And if you as an individual are not getting something, then our soul is going to bring to us what appears to be an unintended outcome, what appears to be hopefully not too much of a trauma, but some sort of an experience to what? To slow us down, to wake us up. A lot of people react to the, oh my God, I'm terrible. I've done something wrong, or God hates me, or whatever it is that we get into, as opposed to settling in and going, what is this teaching me? What do I have to learn from this? And in your language, you know, to get back into that gratitude. And once we get back into that gratitude and we surrender into, okay, this happened for a purpose and I'm willing to accept that. Thank you for bringing this into my life. Then a great peace comes over us. And then from that, when we give up the resistance, because what we judge, we lock in place. What we judge, we give our power away to. So judgment is a real big key, or non-judgment, or forgiveness is a real big key to be able to allow the things in life to flow through us so that we can evaluate them for the information that they're providing us with and then integrate that and embody it and then express in the world in a higher self in our service.
So often we're getting in our own way of letting those things align. We're moving into that state of disintegration where we're battling all of that static that's going around us. You know, we're creating a lot of times that very noise rather than just surrendering to that divine state of being, that divine state of great grace that permeates all of life. Ultimately, how then do we start to form that sense of knowing, that sense of awareness, that grace will be there for us, that grace from others will be there for us?
Yeah, trusting in the universe that everything works together for good. I mean, that sounds maybe way too stereotypic or something, but to me, that's the experience. And, you know, it's hard to use the mind to change the mind. It's a little incestuous.
Yeah, and there again, I look at that level of trust and we say, trust the universe. So often, we're looking at that universe from the inside out and saying it's out there. But that same energy that's out there is also in here, inside of us. We're connected with it, but we think we lose sight of that connection. That trust comes from in there saying, you are also in here with me and you don't leave me.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, I like to look at us like our soul. I like to affectionately call our souls little sparklets of the divine. Yeah. You know, and these little sparklets, if it's within us and it's without and it's a part of the universe, it's like whatever's animating us knows what it's doing.
Yeah.
In simple terms. And if it wasn't animating us, we'd be dead. We wouldn't be having this conversation. It really wouldn't matter too much. So if we're alive and we're being animated by something, that something is infinite in its intelligence and it knows a whole lot of shit that we don't really know anything about. And so for me, beelining it back to that experience within is the most important thing, you know, to me in my life. And what I found, certainly through yoga, for example, because the breath, just connecting with your breath, you're looking for a practice, you know, connecting with our breath is a great way to start to slow the mind down a little bit. Because in that active beta state where it's like bubbling and zipping and zapping and frizzling all day long, how do we get down to that alpha theta state where we can calm ourselves, calm our nerves, slow our thinking down so that we can experience the other voice inside of us, that intuitive voice inside of us? And so for me, I use breath and movement, you know, a million times a day as a way, as tools, basically, as leverage for emotional change. So breath and movement as leverage for emotional and mental change and as leverage for spiritual awakening. Because, you know, the yogis teach us that once you learn to control your belly button, it sounds really strange, but once you begin to control your navel with your mind, you can control your life. Because if you can control your navel, you can control your diaphragm. If you control your diaphragm, you can control your breathing. And if you can slow your breathing down or speed it up through different kinds like a Kundalini yoga or a fast breathing, or a slow breath, you can change your whole body's biochemistry. You know, and people like, you know, Joe Dispenza you know, and people like that and Greg Braden and people like that, they teach this stuff all the time. And I think for the listeners, it's important to know that we have yoga, meditation, things like this. These aren't philosophical things necessarily. They're not even spiritual things. These are biological things. These are biological tools that humans really could use in order to have some of the experiences I think that we've been sharing today.
Yeah, we look at that idea again and we become disintegrated in our alignment of all of our being. We're mind, body, soul, spirit, so much more than that. But at its essence, it's just one simple core energy. That same core energy runs through every level of being that we know to exist from our perception.
Yes, 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 yes.
That to me brings us back to that level of breath. You know, so often we're not even present that we are even breathing.
Yeah,
we're so caught up in distraction, you know, and that to me is amazing to look at when we get into some of those other practices of how you can simply do something that fundamentally simple to bring it all back on track, if you believe.
Yeah, well, thank goodness yogis are going into scientific laboratories and they're doing hooking up to wires and videos and different things and seeing how it is that these things affect our biochemistry and our physiology. So yeah, I mean, how many times a day we breathe, I can't remember.
And that's amazing to look at that, because what levels do we ascend, descend to try to dissect that all, to just come back, say, yes, the breathing matters. Yes, your energy matters, you know, but we've got to form all of these constructs.
Right.
To kind of validate it and force that expectation on it.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit like coaching. You know, you're a coach, but you know, most of the coaching we do is we're coaching egos.
Yeah,
we're calming egos down long enough for people to find their soul for a moment.
Just leading people back to unpack what no longer is needed in the suitcase for that journey.
Yeah,
what is weighing you down? If it's weighing you down, why? How can you change your reaction or your interaction with that? How can you let go of it, surrender it if you need, so that journey just flows?
Beautiful. And then I think it's the same thing for the why we have to go to a laboratory and put, you know, electrodes on yogis, because the ego needs to know these things.
Need to know.
But the mystics have known these things forever. And the soul knows these things forever, because there are certain things that, especially today in the world, with the way we have so many different things going on with vaccines and with with different perspectives and with politics and all that stuff. Yeah. Everybody's got to find for themselves, like, what is right for you? Like, what feels right for you? And my sense is that if there's only one power, one mind, one presence, and one construct of possibility in the universe, and then ego tweaks it to like modify it, to like be different for all these other people. But when you keep going down layer and layer and layer and layer, you're going to get back to something that unifies all life, which is how I think we started out this conversation today. Like, what is that presence that unifies all of life? And to be able to get back to that place, and then we don't need to have a laboratory tell us that, hey, when I shift my breathing and I allow myself to be aware that, the way I look at it is just like, it's like having an orgasm all day long. It's like the divine is breathing us. How profound is that? That there is a God or goddess of love or light or energy or infinite intelligence or a field of possibility that is animating us. And it's like filling our lungs in and out and out. And it's breathing us all day long. If you stop, an individual stops to actually have the experience of what that feels like, your whole body lights up like a pinball machine.
I'm going to sit with that a while. That's, you know, to me, that's the epitome of that amazing, wonderful truth that just simply is life.
Just simply is life. Isn't that the truth?
That doesn't have to be any heavier than what we make it.
Nope.
That life is simply animating us. I love that outlook today. You know, I want to thank you, Mark, for shifting me into that awareness today and saying, what is animating us? And then how do we turn that motion into significant meaning for ourselves and others?
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that's the soul's purpose that you talk about, I think.
Yeah.
That's the soul's purpose, is how do I realize that, connect with it, and then allow it to express itself, because it has a message and it knows what it wants and it knows what everybody else on the planet is doing and wants simultaneously, which is beyond our understanding, because we can't even like think three things at a time without, you know, getting stressed out. There's something that holds a gazillion things in its own mind simultaneously throughout the entire universe, billions and billions of planets and billions of galaxies. Like, how in the world is this possible? It's breathing us. It's living in us. Tune in and find out what its message is for you. And then it has a message probably for humanity. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been bothered being born on this earth. And that's the beauty of it.
It's an interesting angle for me to look at. I'm going to step out on the ledge today. So often I feel we look at that energy, that creationary force of life, as having that same conscious notion and energy we each have, as kind of a equated wholeness of being. What if our perceptions of that are wrong? You know, I like to look at that and just simply say, let's bring that into our awareness and say, maybe what we formed in our belief isn't actually a correct representation of that. For me, I'm looking at that with this idea of saying, what if part of the role of that is that source knowing that I can't do and think all of this myself. So I have to empower this person. I have to empower this person. I have to empower this person to take care of their share of the load. Just like delegating within an organization. What if that being isn't up there saying, hey, I'm the boss, do as I say. What if that boss is up there with grace saying, I believe in you to do the role you're here to do. I put that faith in you. You be the boss. You be the guide. How often do we look at that perspective and say, maybe that might be a potential reality? Maybe that might be a reality we can shift to and create. We're doing it throughout our cultures in the workplace. We're doing that throughout our cultures and our communities and saying, we're looking at how we all interact as a unit, as a culture. What if that's the very message telling us, wake the hell up? The light is in you. The light is in your action. The light is in how you're serving others. Because that's what I created you for. It's just a perspective. And you know, I'm going to step it out there today and say, think about it and consider it. If it serves you, grab it. If not, it's a thought. They come and go.
Beautiful. Ergo, the light within.
Yeah. Hmm. We eventually in this program step out on a ledge somewhere where that natural space just comes to say, let's think about what's going on inside of there, inside of all of us. And just look at it. So you know, we stepped out on that today. I'm glad, Mark, you brought me to that point today to sit and just look at who and what we are inside and accept it with that loving state of grace that says, it is what it is. I love you for who and what you are. I love others with gratitude for who and what they are. So I thank you. Now that's where I've arrived with it today. It's such a valuable lesson to look at.
Well, I certainly enjoyed being here with you and sharing this spiral of awakening as we bounced off of one another and pulled in so many lovely principles and practices and perspectives that enable us as individuals and other people to, what I would say, to find some peace and some fulfillment and some additional creativity and some healing in our lives. Because in that state, what I would call from my model, in that state of divine connectivity, everything's possible. You know, we might have a slightly different language for it, and I have to honor and appreciate yours, but everything's possible. And the work that you're doing is just so exquisite, and you're so articulate in your ability to express these things, and what you espouse and what you advocate for is a really comprehensive, heartfelt service to others. And for me, that really lights me up. So I just want to thank you, Jeffrey, for having me here and for inviting me on, you know, to have this conversation with you.
Namaste, my friend. The light in me acknowledges the light in you. I want to thank you for you bringing that healing to me as I work through this program today. That energy allowed me to find that space to simply open my eyes and become aware of it. Where can our listeners go to connect with this sense of healing, Mark, with you if they're on this journey and they want to work through to find that state of grace?
Good. Well, they can find me on my website, which is conciergelifecoach.com, conciergelifecoach.com. And they can sign up for a free call and we can chat. And folks, you can tell me what's going on for you and what's not working, what's missing, what you're feeling, what the pain is, where the healing needs to come, what your goals are, what you want to attain and achieve. And intuitively, I'll tune in and be able to give you some ideas on if I can help you, how specifically I can help you. And what are some of the things that are in the way, perhaps, of having you get to where it is that you want to go. So just go to Concierge Life Coach and give me a call and we'll hook something up. And that's how you can find me.
Well, I thank you. To our listeners, give yourself that state of grace. That's the greatest gift. You can extend yourself to just truly love where you're at. Reach out to Mark. I want to thank you, my friend. This has truly, truly been such an enlightening conversation. Let's do it again soon.
Awesome. I'd love to do that. Thank you so much. It's really been an honor and a privilege. I love what you're doing. It's fantastic.
Likewise. Thank you. You're such an inspiration.
Okay. Namaste, my brother.
Namaste. Take care.
Okay. You too.
Gratitude in all things opens the door to grace. English clergyman, theologist, and prolific writer Thomas Adams shares this brilliant gem. Grace comes into the soul as the morning sun into the world. First a dawning, then a light. And at last the sun in his full and excellent brightness. Mark and I have shared our views on grace. Now we'd like to hear how you plan to utilize grace to shine your light on yourself and others. Drop us a note at social media at The Light Inside Podcast telling us what you found of meaningful value in today's show. And as always, we are grateful for you, our valued listening community. Join us next week as we learn 3 steps to quiet your inner critic with Shelley Johnson. Tune in to find out how on The Light Inside.